Hi everybody, welcome to Enlightenment Today. I'm Jason. Today we'll be speaking about Zen. So what is Zen? Well, first, the word Zen is Japanese and it derives from the Japanese pronunciation of the Middle Chinese word Chan, which in turn derives from the Sanskrit Jhana. Now Jhana, Chan and Zen refer to a state of consciousness or meditative absorption in the eternal present moment. Now that is beyond thinking. And when we think of that, it is a mind of no deliberation. Now, from the Zen perspective, the Zen mind is the enlightened mind. It is the effortless mind. It is the unstuck mind because it is beyond thinking and it is the mind of no deliberation. You are completely absorbed in the present moment where thinking cuts off. So Zen comes from the Mahayana Buddhist school. It's a school of Mahayana Buddhism. And it is believed that Bodhidharma brought Buddhism from India to China, and he was the original proponent of Zen. Now, a lot of people, they speculate whether Bodhidharma actually existed or whether he was just a mythological character. It's believed he existed somewhere between the 5th and 6th century, but he's attributed to the birth of Zen. They say that maybe even he brought Jhana from India to China. Now, in the evolution of Buddhism, when it mixed with Taoism in China, we had Chan Buddhism, which became Zen Buddhism in Japan. A lot of people believe the end of the Eastern philosophical spiritual traditions is actually Zen. And so they say that the spiritual traditions began in India and ended in Japan. It's an interesting thought. Now, so what is Zen really? So Zen is about getting back in touch with the immediate reality around us at all times. Now, I'll give you a personal encounter of this. My wife Gai Young and I were walking through the Himalayas. We actually walked up the Annapurna circuit about 220 kilometers for 18 days. And our days were long. Our days were like 14 hour days walking. It was an amazing journey. One of the best experiences of my life. But on one special day, I'm walking along and my wife is walking behind me, and then as we do, we often inquire as what people are thinking, and I ask my wife, you know, what are you thinking? And she said, no, I'm just walking and listening to the insects. And what that revealed to me is for hours I've just been swimming in my own thoughts and not recognizing the immediate reality around me, not listening to the insects, not being conscious of my breath and my feet moving on the ground. After that, I obviously was. Now, this is getting back in touch with that reality relates to something also in psychology that they call the adaptive psychology. Now, that means, what the adaptive psychology means is we can use a city as an analogy, for an example, or a town. When we relocate, for example, and we go to a new place, everything's new. It's vibrant, you know, new shops, new people to meet, new restaurants to eat at, and wonderful new experiences. But after a month or so, it all becomes background noise and we take it for granted, basically. It loses the wow factor. So Zen is about bringing the wow factor back to life and to always have the background as the foreground. It's always about making the background vibrant at all times. It's about not taking things for granted, keeping things very simple, so we can listen to the insects, so we can still enjoy that meal at the restaurant that we've been to 1,000 times and be completely present. Now, there are methods that they use to do this. In Zen, there's obviously the meditation practice called Zazen, which is sitting meditation practice. But from the Zen perspective, it's not about getting anywhere. It's not about becoming enlightenment. It's about coming back into the present moment so you can appreciate that immediate reality at all times. So you're not trying to be somebody or get somewhere with this. You're just coming back to your breath. You're coming back to the stillness of the present moment. And the Japanese Zen master Shunro Suzuki, he answered a student's question this way. They said, you know, why would we sit and meditate? Because we're not trying to get somewhere or this and that. And he said, no, you don't have to try and get somewhere. We sit in Zazen because that's what Buddhas do. So, you know, as I'm a writer and writers read books and they write. Likewise, Buddhas, they sit and they meditate. They sit in Zazen, they sit in stillness. So the problem is, what Zen have obviously revealed is what I recognized when I was walking through the Himalayas. I was swimming in my own thoughts. So thinking is the problem. And to be more precise, overthinking is the problem. Thinking itself isn't bad. It's when we overthink, it cuts us off from acting naturally and also perceiving reality naturally. Now, this happens because there's a lot of chatter usually in our mind. You know, in Buddhism, they call this the monkey mind. And most of us are aware of this because sometimes people daydream and we imagine. And all it is basically just our mind, as Thich Nhat Hanh would say, ruminating on itself. It's just like a cow eats grass and regurgitates and continues to eat. We are ruminating on our own thoughts. And the problem is because we are ruminating on our own thoughts and the monkey mind is just chattering away and we're listening and believing it's us, we begin to act from that chatter. And we think that's who we are. And this is what Alan Watts would say, would call is the genuine fake. So our whole behavior, most people's behavior is reacting just from that mental activity and that chatter. And that's not really us. That is analogous to like a rock in an empty can of soda. When you like this and you can throw it and it makes all this noise, that's all that's happening in your head. It's meaningless noise. It's just the accumulation of stuff within your subconscious, what they call samskaras in Sanskrit, that are just rising to the surface. And you know, the problem is when you start to react to those and you think that's who you are. So because we're not taught about that, because we're not taught about to be observant of our mental activity and be conscious of the monkey mind, our nature is warped from birth. So our whole persona system is built on this mental activity. So the problem in the effort in Zen then is to how do we go back to being natural? Now, Zen have a lot of peculiar methods that they've designed to counter this. And a lot of the methods are crazy, and this is why a lot of people think of Zen masters as buffoons, and they think that these methods are just utter buffoonery. But what I'm going to explain to you is that this isn't buffoonery, it's utter genius what the Zen masters have created to get us out of overthinking and getting us back into the nature of reality in the present moment. So one of the great methods was is called a koan. Okay, in Japan it's koan. Now a koan is a story, dialogue, statement, and ultimately a riddle used to provoke doubt in the mind of the student to test their progress in being Zen. So there's so many stories like this, and like I just said, it's ultimately a riddle to test anyone's, actually not just a student of Zen, but anybody's progress in being Zen. So one of the more famous koans is when a monk asked his Zen master, Tungshan Shouchu, which is, I think, it actually happened, this, and he asked Tungshan Shouchu, what is the Buddha? Now Tungshan, he replied, 3 pounds of flax. Now that makes completely no sense if you look at it logically. 3 pounds of flax. A lot of scholars believe he was weighing flax at that point in time, so he was giving a sort of a spontaneous reaction just about what he was experiencing. It's kind of, you know, a good explanation, but it's not really what it is. Why he gave a nonsensical answer is because the student asked a nonsensical question. And so the point of it is it's an irrational answer. And the irrational answer stopped the monk from thinking. He stopped thinking and he stopped trying to use logic to understand something that is actually beyond logic. He's trying to understand what our Buddha nature is, our deep down essence within us. So Tungshan gave a crazy answer which made no sense, but it brought the monk back into reality. Now another good story of this is in Japan there was a monk and he went to the Zen master's hermitage, and the Zen master said to him, "Now tomorrow I want an exhibition of Zen from you. I'm tired of, you know, all the talk and this and that. I want an exhibition of Zen from you." So instantly the monk is like, wow, he starts to fret. He leaves the hermitage, he's fretting, he doesn't know what he's going to do. All night he's anxious about how can he give an exhibition of Zen to the master. Anyway, as he, the next day, as he's walking back to the hermitage, he notices a frog native to Japan, and he goes, that's it. So he scoops it up. He thinks this is going to be an exhibition of Zen. And then he gets there, and the master goes, okay, what have you got? And then the student goes, here. And then the master goes, nah, too intellectual. Now, what he meant by that, it was too contrived. He had to think too much about Zen. He was thinking too much about Zen, and that is ultimately not Zen. So, you know, we can speculate as to what would please the master in this case, but it obviously was not that, because he had to think about it. So another example is a story of a pitcher, a water pitcher, and the pitcher is sitting on the table, and the master says to two students, two of his Zen students, don't call it a pitcher, but tell me what it is. And the first student said, it cannot be called a piece of wood. And the master was like, average, not even close to Zen. And the second student, he knocked the pitcher over and just walked away. And the master was like, he was very pleased. Now, I know it sounds crazy, but this is what a koan is. It's about exhibiting Zen in that moment, being actual Zen. And that student just knocked it over and just walked away. That was his natural response to the situation. Okay, so another amazing example of this is from the great Taoist sage Zhuangzi. Now, because of these sort of stories in the great text, the Zhuangzi text, a lot of people believe Zhuangzi was instrumental in the evolution of Zen and the mixture of Buddhism and Taoism. We can only speculate there, but this passage from the Zhuangzi kind of gets into the exhibit the irrational sphere. So in the Zhuangzi, it states, there is a beginning. There is a not yet beginning to be a beginning. There is a not yet beginning to be a not yet beginning to be a beginning. There is being. There is non-being. There is a not yet beginning to be non-being. There is a not yet beginning to be a not yet beginning to be non-being. Suddenly there is non-being. Now, it makes completely no sense. A lot of people have tried to dissect this passage. It actually goes on like this for quite some time. But with this sort of humor, what Zhuangzi is trying to do is get you out of thinking about Zen, get you out of thinking about what reality is, and get you back into what reality actually is, which is beyond thinking and beyond logic, getting you back in the immediate moment. This is the irrational sphere. Now, a good example of this attitude of Zen, of being very spontaneous, of being very natural in that moment without thinking, is the movie Forrest Gump and the character Forrest Gump, played by Tom Hanks. Now, what I mean by that is Forrest Gump, and when you watch the movie, he achieves all these amazing things without a mind. He has a mind of no deliberation. He doesn't think about it. He becomes a gold medalist at table tennis, he's a decorated war veteran. His love for Jenny never moves, even with her actions. He loves her unquestionably. All of these great, he becomes a shrimp captain. He creates Bubba Gump Shrimp. So you have all of these amazing stories, and he does this without thinking. He achieves all of these amazing things. And what this exhibits to us is that if we could act in that manner, then we could achieve all those great results as well. And the irony of that story is he is a simple-minded man. Now, this is the irrational view, okay? So this means that when we look at life, we cannot make a logical conclusion about it. The universe does not have a logical conclusion, even though we're trying to create one. It doesn't have a logical conclusion. And when you get into the irrational sphere and you understand that life has no logical conclusion, then the magic of life is presented to you. And that's the immediate moment. That's the understanding of Zen fully. Now, what this means is Zen don't have any opinion on the meaning of life, because life has no logic. There is no meaning of life according to Zen, because there is no logical end. This is why in The Power of Myth, when Bill Moyers asked Joseph Campbell, he said, you know, he asked him about the meaning of life, because, you know, as we do in the West, we are seeking always logical conclusions. And Campbell said beautifully, you know, we're not so much looking for a meaning of life, but we're more so looking for a feeling of being alive, an experience of being alive. And that experience of being alive is Zen. Zen is a zest for life, an energy for life that we have, where we don't have to think about it, but we are so alive and we approach life with no filters, no conditioning, no beliefs, no forethought or premeditation. The mind is completely unstuck and free of boundaries. This is the Zen mind, and this is the state of being fully alive. Now in China, this they have a word for this actually, this naturalness, and it's called Zhidran. Now, Zhidran is the naturalness of life, the spontaneity, being spontaneous, you're spontaneous of itself. That's what Zhidran is. It's nature is spontaneous of itself, and so are we, because we are nature. Now, when you have this naturalness, it evokes something else. Another word in Chinese called wu-wei, and wu-wei means, it can mean effortless action, non-doing, non-forcing, and ultimately that means intelligent spontaneity. Now, what do I mean by intelligent spontaneity? Well, the intelligent spontaneity is Zen. This is what wu-wei is. But a story to articulate this is a story in Japan where there's a boy who wants to become a Japanese fencer, and he goes to the master's abode to study being a Japanese fencing master. And the master says, the student goes, you know, come on, what do I need to learn? And the master says, just get onto the dishes. And then the student, you know, is a bit confused at the beginning. So he goes to the dishes, he starts doing the dishes, so forth and so on. And then as he's doing the dishes, the master comes along and he hits him with the fencing stick in the head. And the student's like, what the hell? Like, and so he the next day he's doing the dishes again, and the master hits him right in the back, and the student doesn't know what's going on. And this goes on for weeks. And then each day that the student has a different approach to it. One time he thinks about if he came from here, next time he's going to come from here. And then the student hits him, the master hits him right in the butt. So all of his thinking about it was not approaching the moment correctly. And it wasn't until after weeks he completely let go, and he let his mind rest into his body. And then as the master come along, without any thinking. This is intelligent spontaneity. He was completely absorbed in the present moment and he reacted accordingly. This is Zen. See, this is Zen. It's acting natural without it having to think. This is when the mind and body have actually merged into one, which they actually are, but we are trained differently in our world. We're training the body and we're training the mind as if they're separate. But the human instrument is actually is an embodied instrument. The mind is embodied. That's what they say, embodied cognition. Now, what this means is when the mind and the body become one, this is the fullest expression of Zen. This is when you can be Zen in life, what I say Zen in life. And what that means is you are present in each situation, in each moment. You're fully there, you're alive in each moment. You're Zen washing the dishes, you're Zen cooking dinner, you're Zen in conversation, and yes, you're Zen on the toilet. This is what it means. And this is the experience of Zen, of being completely present in that moment. Now, if you want to go deeper into Zen, if you're serious about what I've been talking about today, I recommend, there's actually a lot of books on Zen actually that I could recommend to you. But some of my personal collection to get into, I love this book by Alan Watts. This is The Way of Zen. It's in depth and it goes into all facets of Zen, and it also goes through the history of Buddhism into China and then into Japan and Korea and Vietnam and so forth and so on. So I really recommend this one, The Way of Zen. Another book is The Lankavatara Sutra by Daisetsu Suzuki. And actually Daisetsu Suzuki, you could read any book on him and it's brilliant. And anything that he has on Zen, I highly recommend. But this is one of the central sutras of Zen. Another book is The Zen Teaching of Bodhidharma. This is translated by Red Pine. And this is a great insight into the life of Bodhidharma and the wisdom of Bodhidharma, the unconventional wisdom and the irrational mind. So something I recommend. If you want some more in-depth stuff, this is Zen and the Psychology of Transformation by Hubert Benoit. This is more commonly known as the Supreme Doctrine. This is a tough read, but it's worthwhile for the person who is serious about intelligent spontaneity, about Zen, and about the embodied cognition. This is a brilliant, brilliant book. And as I mentioned before with Zhuangzi, this is the complete works of Zhuangzi. This is the Burton Watson translation. There are many good translations on Zhuangzi, but this is one of my favorite books. And this gets into a lot into the irrational mind of Zen, even though it's a Taoist text. Now, some more practical ones that you might want to look at is Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind by Shunro Suzuki, which is a great book on more of the practical applications of Zen, about practicing Zazen and about your approach to life, about your awareness of the monkey mind and so forth and so on. And another one that I like is Silence by Thich Nhat Hanh. This is really practical for the modern day. This one's an amazing book, and it goes into how we are, you know, basically constantly distracted by, you know, the digital world and social circumstances and so forth and so on, and ways that we can counter that, okay? So I highly recommend that, but there are so many books out there on Zen, okay? So in summary, when we talk about Zen, Zen is related to the Japanese word onsui. Now, onsui means cloud and water. Now, what does that have to do with Zen? Because onsui, cloud and water, is the enlightened mind, because the enlightened mind drifts like a cloud and flows like water. Okay, so my question to you is, have you had this experience of Zen before, longer than the temporary moment, and had a permanent experience to finally realize that deep down within you, you are the Buddha?